the Imam alayhi salamullah, he had to make a stand against such evilness. Such evil that the majority of the people back then and even now don't see. As long as they are comfortable, as long as they are getting what they want, as long as their affairs are in order, they think everything is fine. But the ruling parties, the ruling powers, they are constantly working behind the scene, depriving people of their rights, creating forms of evil that sometimes we might see as innocent. Especially when it comes to moral actions. You see that, for example, in our current times, there are those who push the agenda of moral vices to be something entertaining, to be something freeing, to be something good. But we don't see it. We see the fancy face of it under the terms of freedom, for example, where a logical person, a smart person, would understand that's a form of oppression, that's a form of evil. And Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, he set to eradicate such evil. He set to clear and cleanse society from such evil.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Under the starry sky of the desert, from the very heart of evergreen forests, with the radiance of silver-colored sand, in the midst of proud mountains, closer, Iran,
Salam. I'm a nature enthusiast and traveler. In Close Up Iran, I introduce you to the wonders and beauties of my country, Iran. Stay with me. Prisons mostly induce meanings like fear and horror. There are many prisons around the world that are notorious for being dangerous and horrifying. Like the U.S. Guantanamo Bay prison in Cuba. Or the Belmarsh prison in the UK. Such prisons, how much frightening they be, keep humans as prisoners. But today, I'm visiting a prison where demons are being kept. Okay. It's just a story which locals say. Whatever they say, this place is an extinct volcano with an empty crater, which is known as the Solomon's Prison or Demon's Prison, which is located in West Azerbaijan province. It's for about 20 minutes that I have been hiking in this mountain, and I think I'm close to it. The Solomon Prison is a 100-meter cone-shaped hill with a horrible hole inside and a strange story. Located in West Azerbaijan province, northwestern Iran. The hill has been shaped over thousands of years by sediment layers of mineral stones of an ancient lake. It used to be a temple between 830 and 660 BCE with several sulfur hot springs around it for medical treatment. Unlike other volcanoes, the prison hill is made of sediment layers of mineral stones. There used to be a spring in the region, which turned into a lake over time. Its water was filled with salts and sulfur. Through time, the salts resided at the bottom of the lake, becoming solid sediment layers. Now, after thousands of years, the layers have shaped the hill with a hole inside. Gradually, the lake dried out, but its remnants are still visible. The fortified site is the first attraction of West Azerbaijan province, recognized as a World Heritage Site in July 2003. Forget about the modern prison structure with bars. It doesn't look like a prison at all. It's actually a hole at the top of the mountain. There are many myths and stories about this mountain. Locals believe that a disobedient demon was once jailed in this hole. And anybody daring to set foot into the black hole will be murdered, locals believe. That's why it is named the Demon's Prison. This is just a story. True or not, it doesn't matter. But the fact is, this place was once a fire temple, tomb, sundial. Anything. Anyway, it is worth climbing the edge of the volcano and looking inside. And the smell. It is the smell of sulfur. Mountaineering equipment to go inside the hole, but actually, I don't have the guts to do so. I'm not that skillful. However, I've brought a quadcopter with a camera attached on it. This can take videos or photos from inside. Hold on, please. Hold on. Okay, that's it. Let me tell you something. Many things have been discovered from this hole. Things like skeletons, spearheads, or something like it. This is well worth to climb to get here, exactly to the top. And looking down into the crater is a great experience. Also, stunning views from the top.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
The wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
An Israeli minister has claimed that dropping a nuclear bomb on the blockaded Gaza Strip is an option. The Israeli Heritage Minister Eliyahu made the remarks in an interview with Radio Kol Barama. Eliyahu also insisted that allowing any humanitarian aid into Gaza was wrong, claiming there is no such thing as uninvolved civilians in Gaza, calling the innocent civilian population in Gaza Nazis. Following the remarks, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu suspended the minister from cabinet meetings. Hamas resistance movement, however, pointed out that Eliyahu's remarks were reflective of the Netanyahu regime's genocidal mindset.
The statement by what is called the Israeli Heritage Minister in the Zionist cabinet that throwing a nuclear weapon on the Gaza Strip is one of the solutions didn't come out of nowhere, but it is an expression on the level of decadence, Nazism and sadism that takes place in the minds of the cabinet of the occupying entity that is based on murder and genocide.
The remarks also drew condemnation from around the Arab world, and Iran called for a swift international response. The United Nations Security Council and the International Atomic Energy Agency must take immediate and uninterrupted action to disarm this barbaric and apartheid regime. Russia has joined a chorus of condemnation that was sparked over controversial remarks made by an Israeli minister about the regime's openness to a nuclear strike in the Gaza Strip. Maria Zakharova Zakharova, Russia's foreign ministry spokeswoman, said that the main issue was that Israel appeared to have admitted that it had nuclear weapons. Saudi Arabia, Jordan, and other Arab states have all denounced the comments. Arab League Secretary General Ahmed Abu Tait has said the remarks revealed that Israel possesses nuclear weapons, which is an open secret. He also added that the comments also confirm the truth of the racist view Israelis hold against Palestinians. Since Israel's war began on Gaza on October the 7th, the Israeli military has dropped more than 25,000 tons of explosives on Gaza, equivalent in power to two of the nuclear bombs used on Hiroshima. Euromed Human Rights Monitor has said Israel has admitted to bombing over 12,000 targets in the Gaza Strip, with a record tally of bombs exceeding 10 kilograms of explosives per individual. Israel's use of internationally banned weapons in its attacks on the Gaza Strip has also been documented, especially the use of cluster and phosphorus bombs. The Israeli regime is estimated to possess 200 to 400 nuclear warheads in its arsenal, making it the sole possessor of non-conventional arms in the Middle East and the wider West Asia region. Tel Aviv, however, neither admits nor denies owning the weapons under a policy of deliberate nuclear ambiguity. It has also defied international calls for it to sign the Non-Proliferation of Nuclear Weapons, the NPT, something that further corroborates its running of an offensive nuclear weapons program. The United Nations General Assembly has already backed a resolution urging the regime to give up its nuclear weapons and join the NPT.
Gaza Strip skyline. Israel's bombing campaign continues. An apocalyptic scene. It appears Israel is using the banned white phosphorus bombs again. Bombs which burns the skin down to the bone. The death toll continues to mount, like at the Al-Maghazi camp. 51 Palestinians murdered. Another massacre on top of the others. Genocide on speed. The cries over the loss of a beloved one, which is why people are angry worldwide. But the biggest rally for Palestinians ever to have taken place in Washington, D.C. The war is coming at a cost for Israel. Diplomatically, Bolivia cut off relations with Israel, with Turkey, Colombia, Chad, and Honduras recalling their ambassadors. Persian Gulf Arab leaders meeting with the U.S. Secretary of State. They all called for a ceasefire, but Blinken did not blink. No to a ceasefire, and on a humanitarian pause, a big maybe.
It's our view that a ceasefire now would simply leave Hamas in place.
Yet Blinken had only echoed Netanyahu's statements on a ceasefire.
Calls for a ceasefire are calls for Israel to surrender to Hamas.
David Petraeus, the retired general of the U.S. Army, responsible in part for his failure in Afghanistan and also in Iraq, in a leaked audio file, encouraged and approved Israel's carnage in Gaza.
I see no alternative to the destruction of Hamas, and I use that term specifically because, as Aviv knows, there's a military doctrinal term. It's a gradation. You know, you can disrupt, you can deny, you can defeat, you can destroy.
But he must not have been prepared for what an Israeli minister said when asked whether an atomic bomb should be dropped on the Gaza Strip. Amihai Eliyahu said this is one of the possibilities. Let's not forget, the Gaza Strip has already been hit by an atomic bomb. But not at once. Slowly, 25,000 tons dropped on the Strip so far. The resistance fighters slammed these comments as reflective of the evil and terrorist nature of the regime, while they fought street battles against the Israeli regime forces. Israel has suffered casualties as a result.
Israel is a terror state!
Israel is a terror state!
the tide may be turning, with costs mounting for the U.S. and Israel. For Israel, the worldwide anti-Israel protests have shattered its image. These protests have also worked against the U.S.
It's definitely ceasefire. People are getting killed every minute.
In the U.S., there are worries about the aftermath of the war. It's time for Israel's friends to recognize that the current operational approach is causing an unacceptable level of civilian harm and does not appear likely to achieve the goal of permanently ending the threat from Hamas, is what this high-ranking senator said. In other words, the U.S. is at the phase of the war where people are starting to worry about how they will look when this is over. And they are worried about votes also, as cynical as that sounds. Muslim and Arab American groups have threatened to not vote for Biden in 2024. This includes Democratic Party leaders from contested states that can decide elections, such as Michigan, Ohio, and Pennsylvania. That, combined with the sanctioning of Israeli products, which has also gained traction, especially amongst the Generation Zs in the U.S., and not just in the U.S., but around the world. Figures reported by the charity organization Save the Children shows the number of children killed in the Gaza Strip as a result of Israel's ongoing aggression has exceeded annual figures related to global conflicts over the past 4 years. The international NGO says that Israel's brutal military attack against Gaza, which began on October 7 in response to an operation by the Palestinian resistance group Hamas, has so far killed more than the annual number of children killed in armed conflicts globally in each of the past 4 years. According to multiple reports, including the Palestinian Health Ministry and the Defense for Children International, DCI, one child is being killed in Gaza every 10 minutes. Euromed Human Rights Monitor said in a press release on October 18 that since the launch of the indiscriminate bombing crusade against Gaza, an average of 100 children have been killed daily. Hundreds of children are still trapped under the rubble of residential buildings targeted during Israel's strikes on Gaza, and they have not been rescued yet, which implies the actual death toll could be higher. The UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs said in a statement that at least 1,000 children are missing under the rubble in Gaza. The ongoing siege and the relentless bombardment are impeding search and rescue operations.
Gaza has become a graveyard for children. It's a living hell for everyone else. And yet the threats to children go beyond bombs and mortars. And I want to speak briefly now on two of those, water and trauma. The more than 1 million children of Gaza have a critical water crisis. Gaza's water production now, its capacity is at 5% of its daily output. So child deaths to dehydration, particularly infant deaths to dehydration, are a growing threat.
The UN Committee on the Rights of the Child has also issued a statement saying grave human rights violations against children are mounting by the minutes in the Gaza Strip. The statement says armed conflict harms children first and foremost and has lifelong effects on their physical and mental health, their development, and ultimately the enjoyment of all their rights. Children are also harmed when they survive, but lose parents and other family members and friends, and also witness catastrophic events. The committee has also called for an end to the devastating harm that's being leveled on children's lives in the occupied Palestinian territory. It has also called on all parties to protect all children and to provide all the necessary medical and protective support, including psychological support, to begin the long process of overcoming the consequences of these grave violations.
Then, of course, we have the trauma. When finally the fighting stops, the cost to children and their communities is going to be borne out for generations to come. Before this latest escalation, before it, more than 800,000 children in Gaza, that's three quarters of the entire child population of Gaza, were identified as needing mental health and psychological support. Again, that's before this latest nightmare.
In a desperate move, Palestinian children and their parents have started writing their names on their bodies in black ink so that they can be identified in hospitals if they are killed or injured in Israeli strikes. Children pulled from the wreckage of buildings are sometimes unrecognizable due to grave injuries. heartbreaking photos of children lying on steel trays inside Gaza hospital morgues with their sleeves or legs of trousers pushed up to reveal their names have been going viral on social media. The UN Children's Fund, UNICEF, said in a report last Tuesday that almost every child in Gaza has been exposed to deeply distressing events and trauma.
We're talking about children witnessing their parents, their families, their sisters and brothers being killed in front of them, their houses, their communities disappearing in a split second. This has a big toll on their emotional, psychological, and mental health.
The report highlighted that children are experiencing widespread destruction, relentless attacks, displacements, and severe shortages of essential necessities like food, water, and medicine. The report added that without stable electricity and fuel supplies, essential facilities like hospitals, desalination plants, and water pumping stations cannot work properly.
It's interesting, Amy, we have a formula at the United Nations that is applied to virtually every other conflict situation. But when it comes to the situation in Israel and Palestine, there's a different set of rules, apparently. And that's, I think, a big source of my frustration. Where is the transitional justice process? Where is the UN protection force to protect all civilians? Where is the tribunal for accountability? Where is the action on the part of the Security Council, the only mechanism in the United Nations that has enforcement to ensure protection in the occupied territories?
This is A to Z. An introduction to Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, the standards of humility. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. A believer is always humble. Under all circumstances. You know, sometimes if everything is going our way and we're happy with everything around us, you know, we start to act all humble and we're all nice to everyone and we're all caring for everyone. We're affectionate towards others. But as soon as things go wrong, we lose it. We lose our temper. And that real arrogance that we were hiding in us somewhere, it starts to come out. Well, this is why we said a believer is always in the state of being humble, no matter what the conditions be. And his humility, of course, you know, just a side note, is for the believers and ordinary human beings, not towards the enemies of Allah, as some may wrongly interpret. Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq alayhi salam said, "It is of humility to be pleased with sitting in a lower place, to greet everybody encountered, to give up contending even when one is truthful, and to be happy of people's praise for one's piety." So some standards of humility are, number one, sitting in a lower or uncomfortable place when you join a meeting, for instance, or gathering of believers. Another standard is initiating salam before others, even towards the young ones. Sometimes, you know, we just say salam to the elders and just, you know, expect the young ones to say salam to us. Well, not necessarily. You know, initiating salam is definitely recommended and prescribed in Islam, even to the lower, the younger ones. The third standard is not continuing a debate if you have gotten to a point and you have made yourself clear, you got the point across, and the other person doesn't stop. And another standard of humility is not being pleased or happy when people around you praise you for your taqwa. Welcome back, dear listeners. Today we are discussing the standards of humility. If we analyze the arrogance, it is something that suits Allah only. Allah is the only existence that truly deserves to possess this trait. Nobody other than Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is supposed to be or can potentially be acting as someone arrogant. Allah is the only one with the true authority. He is the only one who is in control and has the power and might. So this trait of being arrogant, if it is suitable for anyone, it is none other than Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Now imagine an arrogant person. What is he all arrogant about, we ask? What's special about him in comparison to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? How can you even dare to start being arrogant when you confess that there is Allah who is in control and in charge, and you have no control and you have no authority, and anything that is given to you is by Allah? Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, the sixth divinely appointed Imam, says, "Beware of being haughty and arrogant, because arrogance is like a garment for the majesty of Allah. He who competes with Allah in his majestic garment, Allah will break and disgrace him on the day of judgment." Look how explicit Imam is. Only Allah is mutakabbir. Nobody else is supposed to have this trait of kibr. If he does, then he's competing with Allah. And this is not a fair competition, let me tell you that. Because he is all wise and he is almighty and he is all powerful, while we are all weak, we are no ones. We don't even exist when it comes to our comparison with Allah. So let's not be arrogant, let's be humble.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Economic divide.
The Israeli war in Gaza has continued unabated, with Palestinian body count increasing by the day. A genocidal massacre taking place in front of the eyes of the world. But Palestinians in the Gaza Strip are not the only ones that are being damaged by this. The Israeli economy is also getting decimated, while the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu blindly orders the Israeli regime to murder Palestinians. Hi, I'm Kaveh Tafwayi. Welcome to Economic Divide. Coming up in today's program, Israel's economy, minus 11% GDP drop as a result of the war. Cannot sustain a long war is what has been analyzed on that. Will the U.S. come to the rescue in the form of a bailout? Only time will tell. Then, the forced displacement of Palestinians. Israel has plans to uproot them to either Egypt or Jordan or both. Forced displacement, mind you, is against international law. Will the U.S. go ahead with those plans along with Israel? And then we will take a look at what West Asian countries can do when it comes to this war to stop trade with Israel, boycott Israel, in essence, and Israeli products. Iran has proposed to stop oil exports to Israel.
Israel's aggression on the Gaza Strip has devastated the coastal enclave, killing thousands of Palestinians. The war has also taken a heavy toll on the regime's economy. According to a report by JP Morgan Chase, Israel's economy may shrink 11% on an annualized basis in the last 3 months of the year. The Israeli finance minister has said that the regime's 2023-24 budget is no longer relevant given the Gaza war and would be amended. We'll be right back. Smotrich has put the direct cost of the war at around 1 billion shekels, or $246 million a day, to Israel. There are reports that the current war has had a much larger impact on the so-called domestic security and confidence. Israel's local currency, the shekel, has reached a 14-year low, while the benchmark stock index is down about 10% this year. The tech industry, the engine of Israel's economic growth, started bleeding even before the war began. The central bank has earmarked $30 billion to shore up the shekel, but that figure may rise as the war drags on. Some analysts believe the U.S. may come to rescue Israel's economy if the crisis deteriorates. Time to see what's happening online when it comes to the Israeli war on Gaza. First up, we take a look at Twitter, known as formerly known as Twitter, now known as X. It says U.S.-based @ the CCR warns of Israel's unfolding crime of genocide of the Palestinians. The hashtag BDS movement calls on states and institutions to divest from Israel and all companies complicit in the crimes. What are you waiting for, it asks. Next up, a website says risk of a wider Middle East war threatens a fragile world economy. After shocks from the pandemic and Russia's invasion of Ukraine, there's little cushion if the fighting between Hamas and Israel becomes a regional conflict. Then, top Israeli economist says a recession is almost certain as leaders warn of a long war. A recession is almost guaranteed. This according to a top Israeli economist and its prediction. The Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu warned of a long war with Hamas, spacing it on that, it appears. Then Israel-Hamas war could lead to economic chaos for countries like Egypt, Lebanon, and Jordan, and even cause governments to collapse, based on experts' warning. Each of the three countries is up against differing economic pressures that led the International Monetary Fund to warn in a September report that they could lose their socio-political stability. Now, that warning came shortly before the operation that Hamas executed by the name of Al-Aqsa Flood. This obviously could trigger a war that could easily cause economic chaos that President Joe Biden and the European Union would likely need to address. Well, it's not much of an address so far. They can't even call for a ceasefire and make that happen. And finally, Israel-Hamas conflict may cost the global economy $2 trillion. Ernst & Young has said that. The company's chief economist is warning of severe consequences if hostilities escalate. All right, those are some of the online posts that we picked. By the way, we don't call Russia invading Ukraine, just one of the things there. And also, we don't call the way that this particular entry that we read in terms of Hamas, that it was an actual war that it waged. It was an execution of a plan based on the type of siege and occupation that Israel has had on the Gaza Strip. All right. Let's introduce our guest for our first segment of the Q&A. We have a special guest, in a sense, a former chief spokesperson of UNRWA, Chris Gunness, who joins us. Chris Gunness, welcome to Economic Divide. I'm tempted to ask you a real economic question here, but I fear in your capacity as a former chief spokesperson of UNRWA, perhaps it's best to speak broadly in terms of the economic terms. I mean, Israel's economy obviously is taking a beating because of this war, and it cannot sustain this war based on many accounts, especially the Prime Minister Netanyahu saying that it's going to be long and drawn out. What do you think about the way that Israel is going to be able to come out of this or not, based on the way things are proceeding right now?
Can I begin by saying that wars are bad for economies, full stop. When governments start spending money on wars, they have less money for people, and that is why that everything must be done to avoid this spilling out and becoming a wider war, because it will impoverish everybody in the region, not just Israelis, not just Palestinians. But yes, to answer your question, it seems clear that the Americans and others who support Israel, but particularly the Americans, have given Israel pretty much a green light. There have been calls for respect for international humanitarian law, but essentially Israel has been given a green light to destroy Hamas, in the words of the Israeli Prime Minister. Now, we can have a conversation about whether that's possible. I think it's very difficult. But there's no doubt that American economic aid to Israel will continue. I think that if America had to choose between supporting Ukraine and supporting Israel in terms of financing the war effort, I think they would choose Israel. And I think that it would be foolish for anyone to assume that because the war is expensive and it's costing hundreds of millions every day, it would be foolish to assume that the war somehow is going to grind to a halt because Israel is finding it too expensive. I think that the money will be found from Israel's allies, particularly the United States.
All right, thank you very much for that. And it's too bad that Israel doesn't think of spending this money, let's say for the Palestinians, in an effort to at least try to, well, forget it. I'm not going to get into that conversation right now. It's too long and drawn out. Let's go to our second guest here. We have John Phoenix joining us. John Phoenix is founder of Shoah.org.uk. John Phoenix, welcome to the program. All right, let's see what we got over here. You have Israel that is based on several accounts and news outlets that it wants to forcibly displace Palestinians from the Gaza Strip, basically to put them like objects into Egypt from the Gaza Strip and then from the occupied territories to Jordan. Some news outlets are saying that. Now, aside from the fact that forcible displacement is obviously against international law, doesn't this risk inflaming the region? Already the pushback is there from Persian Gulf Arab countries.
Well, look, this is not a new project. This is project actually is a plan by Professor Yunnan. The plan was actually published in 1980. The Yunnan titled his research of the Israeli policy in the 80s. One of the plans to remove the Palestinians, you know, especially Gaza. I mean, 1950, the American Secretary of State Rogers actually offered Egypt to transfer the local population in Gaza to Sinai, and was rejected by the Palestinians.
Time now for the Infonews section of the program. First up, we're going to take a look at how ties are going between China and Colombia. There's been a development there. China is wooing a close U.S. partner, and as a result, it's working. Now, this entry said Colombia has upgraded its ties with Beijing. That's a new sign that Latin America is just basically tired of Washington gatekeeping its development. Furthermore, it has said China has established over 100 strategic partnerships in the world since the end of the Cold War. So that shows the track, diplomatic one, that China is on. Next up, de-dollarization is still in motion. In this case, in point, we are looking at Thailand, whose central bank has proposed dropping dollars in its trade. The regulator has called for the use of local currencies to mitigate the U.S. currency's volatility. Then this entry was very important. It's about a company by the name of Maersk. It's a shipping company, and it has cut jobs. Basically, it cut 10,000 jobs, and the reason, well, logically, shipping demand has fallen. Now, this is one of the world's biggest shipping firms, and it's cutting 3,500 more jobs due to lower freight rates and also demand. And it had cut 6,500 roles earlier this year, which hence is why that 10,000 figure is what was mentioned earlier. Now, this is our take. When a large shipping firm cuts jobs, that means that the global economy has actually slowed, since there aren't as many products that need to be transported. And furthermore, 2023 growth is projected to be 2.7% by the year's end, and only 3% for the year 2024. This shows the trajectory that we're on. And if that is going to be the case, that's the slowest annual rate since the 2008 global recession. That kind of puts things into perspective. And then finally, we took a look at Americans and their spending capacity in the U.S. Higher interest rates are actually forcing Americans to cut back. They are feeling the pinch of high interest rates, naturally, and that has forced them to hold off purchases of things like homes, cars, and even groceries. Those were the items we picked for our section here by the name of InfoNews.
You're listening to Economic Divide.
The series looks at the financial health of the economies around the world and its impact on countries. You can listen to Economic Divide on Mondays and Tuesdays on IRIB English Radio.
The war on Gaza by Israel continues to take lives. There's no doubt about Israel's bombing campaign. But why so severe that it's decimating the territory to near annihilation? Well, one of the hidden reasons behind this war may be about the Gaza Marine, the license boundary off the coast of the Gaza Strip, okay? It's gas fields of Palestine, of the Gaza Strip. That is the focus of our in-depth section. So let's get going. First, let's take a look at the different gas and oil fields that exist off the coast of Palestine. One is the Leviathan, one is the Tamar, Dalit, I'm sorry, not three, but four of them, and then the Mareb. Okay? The properties include 122 trillion cubic feet of gas that it contains. That's a lot. And the value is estimated to be about $524 billion. Now, the value of this particular area, which is the Mareb field, the proportion or the share for the Gaza Strip would be valued at around $10 billion. That's what value they have placed for it. But there's another interesting thing about this that needs to be put into perspective when there are values and costs that are taken into the calculation. Gas fields, even though they say that they have been explored, is not really that black and white. In terms of the annual income that this is going to give for Palestine and its economy, not bad, $700 to $800 million per year. That's definitely not bad, something that Palestine is not making. And then in terms of the income, the estimates that is given is $7 to $8 billion. This would happen over the course of 10 years. All right, so needless to say, this is something that would come in very handy for Palestine and its economy, that is if Israel allows that to happen. Gas exploration contracts were given out, 12 licenses recently. These are the companies that were involved here. They were obviously for the purpose of exploring natural gas. Italian company Eni, the Korean subsidiary Dana Petroleum, the United Kingdom's British Petroleum BP, as well as Israel's Ratio, just some of the companies. Now, why is this interesting? Because the announcement date was October 30th of this year. Okay? The war broke out on the 7th. During a war, you have Israel making an announcement that 12 licenses were given out to these companies. And one of them, of course, is BP. Don't you find that to be interesting? Or is that a coincidence? By that, I mean, would that be a driving force, perhaps in some way, behind the way that the Gaza Strip is being annihilated in terms of what Israel is doing? All right, here's another point that's very interesting. Back in 2022, there was an MOU that was signed. Israel would export gas to Egypt and to the EU, okay? Now, that makes it interesting in terms of the EU part of it. Why? Because we all know what is happening when it comes to the extreme gas shortage that the EU has. So we do a fact check. You have energy that comes from Israel that's going to Egypt and then the EU. Keep in mind now, this is energy that is stolen from Palestinians with the help of the U.S. and the U.K., because that's Palestinian land of which those gas fields exist out there. And these land belongs to Palestinians, okay? So those are the type of things that needs to be taken into consideration when it comes to this whole thing regarding energy and gas, which Palestine needs to get its share. All right, let's bring back our guests and see what they think about this and more. We have Chris Gunness rejoining us. He's the former chief spokesperson for UNRWA. Chris Gunness, welcome back to Economic Divide. I'd like to actually go into the area of Arab countries in this region, which is something that they could have done in terms of a firmer stance when it came to Israel and the war that it's waging. Aside from the political side of things, how about trade? I mean, they can stop doing trade with it, don't you think, and stand up and, behind their word that they will do something when it comes to Israel. Do you think that there's a will to do that?
I think the position of Arab nations in the region, it varies. I think that there are some who, under American pressure, may feel that they have to continue to sign up to peace with Israel, and there are some who are likely to take a more principled and hardline position. Just to be clear what's at stake, the basis of peace in the Middle East for a long time has been what's called land for peace. And it's the idea that's behind the Arab peace plan of 2002. And that's the idea that in return for peace with its Arab neighbors, Israel would have to give up Palestinian land, would have to give back the land it is occupying.
All right. Let's now hear from John Phoenix. He's the founder of Shoah.org.uk, who rejoins us. John Phoenix, welcome back. You know, you take a look at what Israel is doing to the Gaza Strip. It's really shocking. But in order for this war to stop, which as the recording of this program is still going on, Arab countries have said they can do a lot more. Now, they haven't stepped in to prevent the continuation of this war, but maybe they can do things that can hurt Israel financially, such as trade, stop their trade, or maybe some kind of embargo on Israel. Do you think that there is a will from Arab nations to do that?
Well, we have to draw a line between the Arab nation or the Arab regimes. You know, the people of the Arab world, they all in support of the Palestinians. That is no question, you know. The pressure by the, so far now, with the nearly 30 days of killing, genocide of the Palestinians, their population now pressuring them to speak out. And that's why, if you notice, after nearly 28 days, the so-called Arab League decided to meet and discuss the matter. Not because they wanted really to discuss. I assume that even the Israelis discussed this before the attack in Gaza with the Arab puppet regimes. So the Arab regime will move and they will boycott. They will stop trading with the Zionist entity because of the street in the Middle East.
Apart from the ramification of the war for Israel's economy, there are now concerns that the crisis could have wider regional and even global implications in terms of economy and security. Oil has been particularly volatile amid concerns that an escalation could restrict a supply from the energy-rich region. Oil prices have surged after Israel said its troops were expanding their ground operation. If the conflict gets regional, oil prices could soar to $150 a barrel and global growth to drop to 1.7%, a recession that takes about $1 trillion off world output.
This may result in firms and households becoming less confident and more uncertain about the future and dampen growth further.
Also reports that Israel is planning to make the Gaza Strip totally uninhabitable and for the residents there to flee to Egypt. Furthermore, Israel's constant raids in the West Bank is threatening to clean that region of Palestinians. The crisis there has deteriorated the economic situation even worse than before. The occupied West Bank was in a financial crisis well before the recent events as a result of Israel's occupation and heavy restrictions on movement. The UN estimated in 2019 that the Israeli occupation cost the Palestinian economy some $47.7 billion in fiscal revenues between the year 2000 and 2017.
Hello and welcome to the Quick Take section. I'm Matti Apossian. Israel's war on the Gaza Strip and the continuation of this war has had some collateral damage for the Israelis. The Israel-Turkey gas pipeline, which was suspended by Turkey for now, and the IMEC project, first the joint Israel-Turkey gas project. Turkey and Israel had plans to conduct joint energy drilling operations in the eastern Mediterranean to transport gas to Europe through Turkey. Israel is prioritizing gas exports to the European Union following Russia's loss of influence in the EU market. But now this project has fallen apart, postponed indefinitely. Why is Israel so keen on having gas exports to other countries anyways? The immediate answer is a natural one. Israel wants to generate income, even though Israel's claims to the gas and the fields themselves are still under dispute. But the other reason may not be that obvious, and it is about Israel's security. Now to the second project, which has been derailed to the Gaza war, and that is the IMEC, the India Middle East Europe Economic Corridor. At the sidelines of the G20 summit held in New Delhi in September 2023, an MOU was signed to develop a rail and shipping corridor. The US saw the IMEC project as a tool to normalize relations between Israel and Saudi Arabia, but since the outbreak of the war and the genocidal war of Israel against Palestinians, Saudi Arabia announced that the normalization plans with Israel are now on hold. That does it for this section of the program. Thanks for giving us your time.
Thirty-one days of bombing Gaza, which is the day of the recording of this program. Israel has had to invest over $50 billion for this war. Its economic loss in terms of GDP, double digits, 11 to 12%. And it has lost major economic agreements, which we mentioned earlier. By the time it decides to stop this war, there may be nothing left of the Israeli economy to come back to. Has Israel calculated the economic impact that this war will have on its economy? Or will its big brother, the U.S., come and rescue it, as we mentioned in the program? That does it for this edition of the program. Thank you so much. By the way, we are only going to be covering the Israeli-Gaza war and the economic implications for the next few weeks until this war perhaps ends. So tell us what you think about that, because we figured this is an important event that's happening. Hope you enjoyed the program. From Mikava Tahwe and the entire team at The Economic Divide, it's goodbye.
IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
No end in sight to deadly Israeli attacks in the Gaza Strip and occupied West Bank. Regime is still pounding civilian targets, including schools and hospitals. Meanwhile, Palestinian Refugee Agency UNRWA is warning its fuel depot in Gaza will no more be able to supply hospitals in a few days. And rallies are held throughout the world in solidarity.